You're listening to Wormcasts by Parabos, a podcast about worms, fluke, flies, lice, ticks, and more. We go beyond the jargon into what really matters and how you can get on top of these costly problems. We'll help you get better production, improve animal welfare, and help that bottom line.
Hi, I'm Dr. Susan Swanee.
And I'm Ian Campbell.
And welcome to Wormcasts.
Today we have the pleasure of talking with John Webware, an ex-colleague of mine from the University of Melbourne. John is the senior consultant with the McKinnon Project at the University of Melbourne. He advises to beef and sheep producers throughout southeastern Australia on all aspects of farm management. In addition to consulting to farming businesses, he also regularly presents to farming groups and is involved with various farm management and agriculture-related committees. He is responsible for teaching undergraduate and postgraduate veterinary and agriculture students. John also runs a 6,000 dry sheep equivalent sheep and beef property on Melbourne's fringe in partnership with his family in his spare time.
I'm sure there'd be lots of that too, John. Today we're talking to John as a consultant to a number of fine wool merino farmers in Victoria who have or are moving away from mules flocks to non-mules flocks. So what I really particularly want to ask him about is what his experience of this is and the lessons that he might have learned along the way with his clients and the advice he'd give to other producers who may be considering it.
Can't mistake her if you haven't seen her. It's smaller and brighter and greener. When they're on the wing, it's a horrible thing. Lucilia bloody caprina.
Well, hello, John. Thank you very much for joining us today. Could you please describe to me, say, the type of breeding ambitions that many of your clients may have had prior to bringing the non-mules breeding ambition into their decisions?
For wool flocks, it's primarily been about improving fleece value, which for a time over the years, if you look at, there was a lot of flocks were progressively getting finer as the market signals dictated that. But look, for the last decade at least, most people in their wool flocks have been, it's a combination of fleece weight, fibre diameter, and some of the other traits. Now, if we talk for particularly the southern areas, the higher rainfall areas, in recent times, there has been a steady progression change in the breeding objectives whilst not forgetting the core traits which drive production and profitability, including fleece value. So the combination of the fleece characteristics, fleece weight and fibre diameter. There's a little bit more emphasis on reproductive traits, although remembering that they have fairly low heritability. But importantly, there's also been a focus on, in light of the prospect of not mules in your merino flock in high rainfall areas, particularly focusing on reducing the wrinkle on sheep and the breech wrinkle on sheep in particular, and also importantly for the southern areas, reducing the dagginess of sheep. Because of the concept of not mulesing and the risk of dags is a pretty scary thought for a lot of merino producers. And I must say, particularly in the higher rainfall areas, so we're talking southern Victoria, perhaps northeast Victoria, where higher rainfall up into the slopes, the southwest slopes of New South Wales.
So like 700 or 650 millimetres?
Look, I would say above a 600 millimetre rainfall area, where and particularly where dags are an issue, even with good worm control. I mean, whilst the worms have a significant part to play with dags, it's even properties with good worm control can still get significant levels of dagginess of sheep and mules sheep. It's more of an issue. So there's been this real focus from a breeding point of view to be conscious of these other factors, which to make the sheep easier to manage in the non-mules environment.
So that would include doing things like DAG scoring and selecting on DAG scoring?
Absolutely. DAG scoring, obviously breech wrinkle, and also in remembering that low worm egg count, which a lot of people across Australia are including in their breeding indexes, it's not going to improve the dagginess of separate traits, low worm egg count and dagginess. Both of them are important, but I mean the dagginess in particular for the southern areas is a really important thing, and we do know it is heritable when you can make progress. But the reality is, if you're buying your rams from a source, a drier area, there might not be any selection pressure for reducing dagginess of sheep. So we're particularly talking about people where they're making progress here, breeding their own rams. And for somebody who's actually buying their rams, it would be important to factor that into their future ram purchases. I mean, still not forgetting the important economic traits, but we've got to consider these other traits with the management of sheep in high rainfall areas, which are unmulesed in southern areas where DAGs are an issue.
John, what's your personal experience of mulesing?
Well, historically, I've come off a property running fine wool merinos before my current flock, so grew up with mulesing, and I through my involvement with the McKinnon Project and the vet school, spent a lot of time training producers in correct mulesing technique. And also, I must say, an important part of that was in tail docking, ensuring producers would not dock tails too short, because that really increases the risk of breech strike if the tails are docked too short, regardless of whether they're mulesed or not. So I've spent a lot of time over the years historically, training in correct technique. And look, everybody I deal with would have loved not to mules, but I mean the reality is that they weren't in a position to take that step. And progressively over recent times, I'd have to say more and more people have very interested in not mulesing. That step's been easier to take for producers in lower rainfall areas or where there's sheep haven't got a lot of DAGs. But even in the higher rainfall areas, people are starting to make that conscious move away from mulesing. But it's in the meantime, people have been breeding plainer bodied sheep, but to facilitate, well, to smooth that transition to a non-mulesed flock.
So what do you think's being achieved by breeding these plainer bodied sheep that don't require?
Oh, well, look, it's quite clearly the risk, the research quite clearly shows that lower breech wrinkle reduces the risk of breech strike in an unmulesed sheep. But, I mean, as I was saying, technique's important there, both regardless of mulesing, but also from a tail docking perspective, where a lot of producers do still dock tails too short. But I think, and that's a really important education message to get across to producers, that the tail should be docked at the third palpable joint or equivalent, not any shorter than that. So tip of the vulva at the absolute minimum, and it does reduce the risk of breech strike. It's interesting, if you look at the risk of fly strike in a mob of ewes with variable tail length, the risk escalates dramatically in sheep where they've got a short tail length. So you can make immediate impact by docking the correct tail length, and it's a lifetime benefit.
And it always surprises me how many flocks you see that where that isn't the case, which I find pretty alarming.
Yeah, I think, and that's right. It's sort of, and it's, but it's a message which the industry needs to sort of. I always emphasise that when I see a flock of sheep where they're being freshly shorn, where it's really
obvious
yeah. where. I always take the opportunity to point out if the tail length is too short because it's an easy thing to change.
It is. So
not retrospectively, though.
No.
Definitely not.
So the next question that sort of bounces to mind is there actually a genetic cost in selecting for non-mules sheep? I mean, you've talked about reducing wrinkle and obviously if you're concentrating on that.
There is, and you're better to speak to a geneticist. Geneticist, the specific genetic and genotypic and phenotypic correlations with different traits. There's a couple of principles though, but if the more traits you select for, the slower the progress in any one trait, because invariably there's pluses and minuses with a lot of traits. But the reality is that you can still make very meaningful progress by if you incorporate selecting for breech wrinkle and or reduced breech wrinkle and reduced DAGs in sheep. So it's not as if they're antagonistic moving forward, but your progress is a little bit slower. But the reality is, they're really important traits to incorporate in your breeding objective moving ahead. And I can see people have had to make a compromise some of their decisions, and you will slow a bit of progress. But I think the reality is, it depends on your environment, how much of an issue it is. If you haven't got DAGs, well, great, you don't have to worry about that. If you've already got very plain-bodied sheep, well, that's great. But I mean, for a lot of people, they're still making progress. And this is a sort of 10, 20, 30-year sort of time frame. To really get to where you need to be. I mean, and the economic traits are still not going to go away. They're still a very important part of what you're wanting to select for in sheep going ahead.
In relation to that, if you're in an area where DAGs wasn't a really big issue, you could potentially do it in a much shorter sort of period of time, I assume.
Well, it's not a trait you'd have to bother about, is it?
You wouldn't worry about the DAGs, but you might still want to get rid of the breech wrinkle, wouldn't you?
Yeah, breech wrinkle would still be important from the urine and breech strike point of view, but not as important as in... and that's where I've seen in northern areas, say in the areas that I work, northern Victoria, I mean, there's more people that have been able to make that decision to move away from mules in more comfortably than in southern areas, particularly where DAGs are a real challenge.
Yeah, so, makes sense. So what are some of the difficulties that you've come across with your clients when, you know, they've been faced with so far in terms of doing this, moving towards the non-mules sheep?
I think if you follow the sequence from a young lamb, there's an immediate benefit for not mulesing for those lambs in lamb survival. In terms of because mules lambs, you do get about a 1.5 kilogram weight penalty up to weaning compared in unmules lambs. Well, mules lambs compared to unmules lambs. So the lamb survival is an immediate benefit straight away, but that's obviously a short term issue in their first summer. If they're more robust lambs, they're better able to survive their first summer. But in terms of, I think the immediate challenges are, there's two big issues, as I see it, which people have to change. One is, and I think there's, it catches people by surprise, the extra risk of breech strike in unmules sheep. So in that first year in particular, the extra effort required for dagging sheep or crutching them. And so what most people have found is that this is in the higher rainfall areas again where dags are an issue, you'd almost have to lock in an extra crutch as part of your management system. Okay, so you're almost talking two crutches a year. And that's sort of not for everybody that's been necessary, but it depends on a property by property basis. But I think that's almost a given that in my experience, most people that have ceased mulesing have had to incorporate an extra crutch in the system. And the other aspect is more use of chemicals to prevent breach strike. And both of those things. So I've been probably the biggest negative is the shorter period post crutching that sheep are not susceptible to breach strike. So really need to be a lot more vigilant in that.
Actually, I was a couple of questions I wanted to ask you off the back of that. One is you mentioned the 1.5 kilogram weight penalty. Is that still the same if they use some form of analgesic when they do that?
Yeah, I think so.
So yes. That's not going to make a substantial difference to that?
No.
Well, you've mentioned the fact that they have to do an extra crutch and they probably have to use more chemical. So you're talking about chemical for the actual breech strike. What about antiparasiticides? So, for instance, the use of long-acting so that they're not picking up the – they're not getting the DAGs associated with picking up larvae.
Look, it's an interesting one. If you certainly you can reduce dagginess of sheep by using long-acting anti parasitic or long-acting drenches. However, it's not the panacea, and I would prefer not to rely on long-actings year in, year out on that basis. Okay, and I mean, the more you use a chemical, the more likely resistance is likely to be occur. But I guess that's just a general principle, not going into details, whether it be a fly chemical or an antibiotic or whatever. But I think as a principle, I would prefer to keep the drenches specifically for use for effective worm control. Okay, I'd be very reluctant to go down the path of relying on the long-acting chemicals for DAG control year in, year out.
Fair comment, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, so that's the drenches, but in terms of the fly chemicals, do you see that you have to use more reliance on treating for flies?
Absolutely. I mean, look, there's no way of getting around it that you will need more fly chemical.
And do you see that as an issue?
As I just said, with the using any chemical, it's not ideal. I mean, we've been very fortunate up to this point in time in products like Soromazin and that have been out for a long, long time. But, I mean, I think the reality is there's more use, going to have to be more use of chemical on the breech to minimise the risk of breech strike. I mean, part of one of the principles of good fly control is making the sheep less attractive, reducing fly populations, all that sort of stuff. But I think, unfortunately, part of it is the extra crutching, but I still think there's extra use of chemical. It will depend so much on individual properties, the type of pastures and production systems they've got, and the risk of DAGs and all that sort of stuff. So I think, it'll be a case-by-case basis or a farm-by-farm basis on fine-tuning that, but the general principle will be more use of chemical and strategic use of additional crutching to control the fly population and control breech strike.
I can see.
So, in other words, in the perfect world, if we had no DAGs or we had a bare breech with no wrinkle, like some of the prime lamb type breeds, then it wouldn't be a big deal. But and I mean, eventually we'll get there, but it's going to take time.
So, I mean, I see, yeah, that's quite a problem really, isn't it? Because we do know that there's increasing resistance with our fly products and we don't really have new ones popping out of the
They're not popping out of the woodwork, are they?
Not at all.
I mean, and so, so I think this is a challenge moving ahead. So, hence the necessity to not ignore taking a long-term view, the genetic control of the sheep. Okay,
it's pretty critical.
I think it is, but it's not going to give us an answer tomorrow. No. It's a long-term process.
You're listening to Wormcasts, brought to you by Paraboss.
If you have any questions you feel we can help you with, or if you'd like to share an experience you've had dealing with a specific parasite, or if you have a topic you'd like to discuss, please drop us a line on the email wormcasts@paraboss.com.au.
Fly strike is a major disease and welfare risk for the sheep industry. Each year, treatment and lost production associated with fly strike cost the industry $173 million. FlyBoss provides you with management tools and the latest information on fly strike to help you predict fly strike occurrence and identify the best management options to reduce risk, deal with fly strike outbreaks, and better understand all matters pertaining to fly strike and its control. Find out more at paraboss.com.au.
Welcome back to Wormcasts.
Today we have the pleasure of talking with John Webware. John is the senior consultant with the McKinnon Project at the University of Melbourne. He advises to beef and sheep producers throughout southeastern Australia on all aspects of farm management.
Like, we'd like to talk about integrated parasite management. Do you think there's anything else in the toolkit that can help?
Look, in terms of integrated parasite management, absolutely good worm control. But I mean, I think I've said the DAGs are a problem in high rainfall areas. Well, they're a worse problem in a place which has got high DAG levels, okay?
Right.
And so worm control, the principle keeping the vulnerable sheep away from the wormiest pastures, in other words, young sheep, using rotations if you've got cattle, it's one of those free kicks you can actually get in agriculture, swapping sheep and cattle over. Those sort of things are really important, and people we talk about all the time, but they're sort of simple things which people need to really adopt more, the whole smart grazing sort of strategies, and vigilant use of the worm chemicals. So all the whole the worm control is an important part of minimising the risk of flies. And so it's a multi-pronged attack. And this is where, on an individual basis, you've got to look at where the best time to shear is. And work in crutching around those times. But I'm not a big fan of pre-lamb in shearing. For putting too much pressure on ewes in wintertime. So if we take that out of the equation, it's a window between after you wean lambs, because shearing lambs at foot is a nightmare. But I mean, so any time between summer and mid-autumn sort of things, probably your window for shearing. But one thing I do know is from experience is that crutching sheep with wet dags is not a very pleasant thing for anybody involved. And I think if you asked any farmer in high rainfall areas where dags are an issue, what is the worst job on the farm? And that's chipping dags off really daggy sheep. And they're going to be daggier in mules sheep. So not a pleasant job on steroids.
Add to that the wrinkle in the sheep, and it makes it pretty hard to.
Well, that's right. So, but what is easier is to take day. So you would typically, in say, if you're a summer shearer, say a midsummer shearer sort of thing, you might jet now. So in early to mid spring. To keep the fly population down and make sure that when they have got dags that they're not attracted to the flies with chemical. Wait till the dags dry up, and then it's a lot easier to remove the dags with crutching in late spring, and they won't get dags in summertime. So then shear, and then it might be another crutching in late autumn, early winter. or into winter. So it depends on when you shear, when your optimal crutching times. But shearing and crutching times part of it, and what fits in around then, when's the appropriate time to apply chemical. But I can't underemphasise enough that whole long-term genetic manipulation of the type of sheep you've got. I think it's critical not to disregard the important genetic traits because, I mean, of all livestock enterprises, I think wool's the one which really you get a huge benefit out of selecting for fleece value. And you've always got a double-edged sword with selecting for weight gain because the correlation with increasing sheep size and all that sort of stuff. So it's the wool thing's a really, really good one. And I look at the people that have had long-term genetic improvement, the benefit for those enterprises in long-term profitability is fantastic. It's a fantastic news story. So, thing with the breech wrinkle and dagginess, and also the low worm egg count is important aspects as part of that whole package. It's chemical. It's in its management. It's not one or the other, and genetics is part of that story too.
And you mentioned both smart grazing and swapping your cattle and your sheep around. And I just wanted to say to any of the listeners that if you haven't already heard our previous podcast with Paul Nylon, we covered those topics in detail with him. So it's a good one to go back and listen to if you haven't already.
Yep.
The last few summers have been actually pretty dry through most of Australia, but I was wondering what you thought the future could hold for your clients that have actually succeeded in going to non-mulesing if we really had a seriously bad fly year with a few of those thunderstorms around.
Yeah, look, I think two aspects. So I always go back to what's fresh in the mind, 2010-11, those really wet years. And apart from the availability of chemical, the really high rainfall washed out the chemicals, so the protection period was shorter. And I think the reality is need to be and application technique's critically important. A lot of people get away with pretty slapdash approaches over the time, but in that really high challenge, it really emphasises the importance of good application, I think, as much as anything else. But as I said, if protection periods are going shorter, and take out the whole resistance story out of part of this, but if protection periods are shorter because of the flushing effect with rainfall, then you're going to have to do it more frequently. But the technique, I can't underemphasise enough, good technique and application is important.
So we've mentioned there's a few extra costs involved in going down this pathway. You've said there was a good return on extra growth rate in the lambs, but is there any, let's look at the other side of the budget in terms of returns, say, for your wool, if you're not mulesing?
It's a good question. And it's actually up until this point in time, there hasn't been a large incentive. But I've always felt there's nothing like the hip pocket to drive change. And I think it's actually happening at the moment. And look, there's a whole myriad of different programs out there now with different companies promoting their the different schemes and with incentives and not discounts for mules wool, but premiums for unmules, whichever way you take that. But it's interesting. I mean, look, there's certainly schemes out there. I mean, I guess. In the moment, I saw one, I've forgotten the company, but with a price which was $3.50 clean above the prevailing spot price for wool of that particular micron. Now, I mean, I think that's close enough to a 15% or even a higher premium for the unmules wool. So you're starting to talk where those extra costs of an extra crutch, an extra chemical, could $3 to $4 per sheep per year. And obviously this is savings, it's not milking, but I mean, where the whole, where liquid nitrogen sits in that, that's still an evolving sort of issue, I guess. But so you're looking at least sort of $3 or $4 a year in sort of extra cost of management. If you look at the extra time of application and extra supervision and extra crutching, but you're talking where fleece values might be multiples of that, potentially higher moving forward. Then it's little wonder we've started to see a bigger wholesale change out there at the moment. Now, whether that continues long term, but it's certainly something which hasn't been part of the framework up until recently. But I mean, look, over the last year or two, there's gradually starting to be some premiums which are well and truly big enough to take notice of and moving forward. And look, it's an incentive. All producers would love not to mules, but I think this will provide extra incentive moving forward. I think it's a positive step. And I mean, look, and speaking to all stages of processing, I mean, they're getting demands. They want unmules wool. That's what their clients want. So that's what we've got. That's the reality of the future of the industry.
Yeah, and the consumer rules. So, so you reckon about that 15% premium would probably do it?
Well, look, if you said you've got a fleece value, look, it's obviously not at the highs of what it was last year, but let's say 15% of a $60 or $70 fleece value, you're talking $10 or thereabouts. Yep. So you're talking numbers which are starting to make sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. So if you had a client that was wanting to go into this process, what sort of advice would you be giving them before they got started?
Oh, look, I mean, one, make sure when you sell your wool, you make sure you set yourself up with the – I mean, there's a number of different schemes which to capture the advantages of the post-mulesing environment. But so that's one thing to start with. But I think you've got to consider the issue of and I think it's really important to sit down, look at your management calendar and look at where the risk time for flies are and then design your management calendar both in terms of crutching and chemical use. It's a really important point. And just make sure you get that, just the simple things like tail docking length and all that sort of stuff. Make sure you do all them correctly so you're not missing out on some of the risk. And also, look at your ram source, not only just from a the fleece traits, which are critically important, but the other traits, are they a sheep which you're going to be able to manage successfully in the post-mulesing environment? And if DAGs are a real issue, well, it's very hard, unfortunately, to get sheep which are not selected for DAGs. You can make small progress in your own flock, in your own system, but I mean, when you're buying rams on, that's a pretty important starting point to look at the genetics of the sheep you've got. So genetics and management systems, they're the first points to really look at.
That's great, John. Thank you. So normally with these podcasts, we have a quick session on tips and tools, and really it's asking you about anything that you can say in regards to the fly category, that mistakes for the uninitiated or things to watch out for. And I think one of the important ones you've already brought up is tail length, and I can't help but agree wholeheartedly with you on that one. But have you got any others that you'd like to think about or tell us about?
Look, I think, funnily enough, I mean, I've probably talked about things which are, I reckon, tools, tips. The whole integrated parasite management thing, the whole making the sheep less susceptible. And so, and that's partly your tail docking thing, it's partly your genetic improvement program. And in the meantime, until you get your perfect sheep, which don't kid yourself that it's going to happen overnight, is adopting a whole swathe of these. The timing of your events is critical to keep flies. The principle, I'd say, keep fly numbers low. It's a lot harder to manage them when the fly numbers are high. Is important. So be aggressive early in terms of management and keep your sheep. Make sure your sheep aren't susceptible to flies, and the worm control is part of that framework as well. And I also think, I mean, for all your hard work and extra work which is involved in a unmules flock, make sure you're capturing the full benefit in terms of when you're selling your wool, and look at the schemes which are most appropriate for your type of sheep and going to give you your best reward for fleece value when you sell your wool. You've got one opportunity to sell it, so make sure you're capturing those benefits.
That's absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much, John, and thank you for joining us today on Wormcast.
Thank you very much. Pleasure.
So, Ian, I just want to talk to you about what I see as the summary for winding up what John had to say today. I think he's made some really interesting and critical points. And one is that, particularly in the southern areas of Australia, you don't only have to look at going away from wrinkles and wrinkles around the breech, but you also need to be thinking about DAG scores. And that's a completely different trait, and it's not necessarily associated with your actual worm burden. So you can have sheep with low worm burden, but they'll still have DAGs. So they're selected for quite separately. So if you are going to go towards a non-mulesed flock, and you're in those high rainfall southern areas, then do think about your DAG score as well. And it might be hard for you to select rams, particularly if you're buying your rams a bit further north, then it's going to be hard for you to get rams that are selected for low DAG score, and it might be something you've got to do in your own flock.
I think the point John made about tail length was a really interesting one. I mean, I've done a bit of sheep farming in my time, and occasionally you get a fly-struck sheep and you bring it in and it's one that's got a really short tail. So within a flock, the problem sheep that you have are often the ones with the short tails, and I think it's really important to have a really strong policy about how you tail dock and what length you tail dock to. That's a really good point that he made.
I think it is too, and if you're getting contractors in, I think it's absolutely critical that you tell them what length you want the tail, and you don't let them dictate what tail length they're going to give you. I think also he did discuss chemicals and the necessity for these, and that there will be an increase in requirement for chemicals, but a lot of it can be done by having an extra crutch, especially in that first year, to try and control flies in the young animals.
And I think it's really good that the consumer, the end product, the processors, they're understanding that it is possibly more costly to maintain a mob of sheep without mulesing, and they're providing premiums for people to be able to do that. So an incentive not to mules is a great way to go about it, and I think that's starting to happen.
I must say I found it a really interesting podcast, and I'm very grateful to John for his input today, so I hope everyone else enjoyed it as well.
Next episode we'll be looking into the past and into the future at the development of anthelmintics through the ages and up until today, what we have managed to achieve along the way, what are our problems today, and where do we go to from here. Until next time, this is Wormcasts, giving you the power over parasites.
You've been listening to Wormcasts, a podcast for Parabos, funded by Australian Wool Innovation, Meat and Livestock Australia, and the University of New England. Parabos provides information in managing parasites and worms in sheep, goats, and cattle. For more information, visit parabos.com.au.